In front of Gucci in the winter, I seen you with your girl. Walking, in your chinchilla fur. I was laid up in the coupe back shader, looking at your face just pure with no makeup. A little bit of MAC lip gloss, hair in a bun well done. Looking for a ring, I seen none, so I hopped out the coupe and hot the suit to stop and introduce like I'm shining. You my destiny, in your diamond cluster, too much just to touch you.
This is Robin, the program manager at CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco, the best astronomy program on the planet.
Put it in your purse and call.
On the telephone, she heard my voice. Tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. If my Rolls Royce is not the ladies, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Mercedes. If my Mercedes would get full of the disease, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Firebird. If my Firebird cannot pass the curve, girl, put your ass on the dumb at your bus.
You're getting closer. My player days is over.
Hello, welcome. This is Marco. You are listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. That was our old program director, Robin, with Shine. So welcome, and it's not nice weather these days, but isn't that wonderful? I am so happy. You know why? There are no forest fires, so that's great. So hopefully it'll stay cool and it will rain on and off for a little while more. It'd be nice to get warm weather, but it's nice that with global warming, things are so hot. I remember a few years ago, Malaysia, Borneo was just burning up. It was so hot. There was no rain, and temperatures are in the 30s or in the 40s. And Malaysia, there was a big smoke cloud over lots of Malaysia, and that happened to us too. And NASA could see these smoke clouds with their satellite. So a couple of years ago, I remember with the ladies' championship soccer, I think Canada won with our Christine Sinclair, our champion. There was visitors, and they said, wow, it's so smoky here. And they said, yeah, the hotel told us that with the forest fires, and that's terrible. So this is good that it's strange, though. They say global warming, and then it's cold weather. So that's nice, though. So welcome. I'm going to talk about out of this solar system today. I'm going to deviate a bit. I talked about a lot of NASA spin-offs the past few weeks, and there's all kinds of NASA spin-offs that are used in our everyday life, in medicine, and to help us on Earth. So NASA does have a lot of spin-offs, and today I'm going to talk about the universe's first type of molecule. So what does that mean, first type of molecule? Well, I'm going to get into this article, dated April 17th, so it's quite current. Today is the 18th, so it was only yesterday. And it says, the universe's first type of molecule is found at last. With SOFIA, NASA Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy, or SOFIA. So SOFIA does infrared astronomy, something our eyes cannot pick up. But if you know the Predator movies, I think he picks up infrared, that Predator, that guy. Alien versus Predator, or Predator can see in infrared, so he can see heat signals. So a lot of molecules, a lot of telescopes in outer space, they're kept cold because basically what happens is they don't want a heat signature from the spacecraft itself to be picked up by the telescope, and the telescope will interpret that as a signal from somewhere. So they have to shield these things, keep them very cold. So we're going to look at infrared astronomy today, April 17th, 2019. On www.nasa.gov, and it says the universe's first type of molecule is found at last. And I think I'm going to, well, Hubble does a lot of viewing in our solar system, but it's really good for stuff outside our solar system. I believe now it is Hubble's 29th anniversary. So I was looking for some type of anniversary because there's always some type of anniversary. And pretty soon, it slips my mind now, but there is a 50th or a 40th anniversary of some important NASA event coming. So when that comes up, hopefully I can. And these are big because imagine we've been doing stuff like that for 50 years. And humans stepped on the moon about 50 years ago, getting close to 50 years, or already past 50 years. So we've been in outer space. We are a space faring race. We are in outer space. and our spacecraft, two of them, have now left the solar system, and they're in interstellar space. So those are the Voyager 1s and Voyager 2s. So that's quite exciting for me. And what I'm doing in my spare time, I'm trying to think of a way, a new propulsion system. So before, or even now, we, like, for example, a spacecraft pushes fuel back out of its engine, or pushes something out of back of its engine. And with Newton's second law, the air pushes that fuel back and it propels the plane forward. So we're igniting fuel, and we're using Newton's law again. So let's try to think of another way to propel a spacecraft. So that's what I'm doing. I don't think if I'll get anywhere, but believe it or not, I sit there and think about it often. So let's get out of this crazy stuff and go to the universe's first type of molecule is found at last. So there is an image here. Not an image, I'd say it's an illustration. And it says, image of planetary nebula, NGC 7027. So that is a real image, okay? And then next to it, there's an illustration of a helium hybrid molecule in the planetary nebula, which is NGC 7027. SOFIA detected helium hybrid, a combination of helium red and hydrogen blue, which was the first type of molecule to ever form in the early universe. This is the first time helium hybrid has been found in the modern universe. So I wonder how far away it was found. So let's see. I'm going to read on the article. So again, April 17, 2019, the universe's first type of molecule is found at last. So this is on www.nasa.gov. Here it goes. The first type of molecule that ever formed in the universe has been detected in space for the first time. After decades of searching, scientists discovered its signature in our own galaxy using the world's largest airborne observatory, NASA's Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy, or SOFIA. As the aircraft flew high above the Earth's surface and pointed its sensitive instruments out into the cosmos. So it is the world's largest airborne observatory. So it's not in outer space. It goes high above the Earth's atmosphere on a jet. When the universe was still very young, only a few kinds of atoms existed. Scientists believe that around 100,000 years after the Big Bang, helium and hydrogen combined to make a molecule called helium hybrid for the first time. I wonder if they combined chemically. That's what it seems. Helium hybrid should be present in some parts of the modern universe, but it has never been detected in space until now. So when I'm saying, I'm just going to pause for a second, when I'm saying it's a molecule, so that means it's a chemical bond, not a nuclear bond. So it didn't change helium. It's still helium that bonded somehow with hydrogen. Back to the article. SOFIA found modern helium hybrid in a planetary nebula, a remnant of what was once a sun-like star. Located 3,000 light years away, so it's only 3,000 light years away. I thought it'd be farther or older. Near the constellation Cygnus, this planetary nebula, called NGC 7027, has conditions that allow this mystery molecule to form. The discovery serves as proof that helium hybrid can, in fact, exist in space. So I'm wondering, this will tell us now, so I'll ask the question now. What is so important about helium hybrid? What is important about this molecule? I think they're going to answer it now. This confirms a key part of our basic understanding of the chemistry of the universe and how it evolved over billions of years into the complex chemistry of today. The results are published in this week's issue of Nature. So it just makes sense. Now, I think even at this time, I believe about 75% of our universe is still hydrogen or hydrogen-helium combination. Anyway, it's really no comparison. There's more hydrogen in the universe than anything else. So back then, in the beginning of the universe, I believe there was probably only hydrogen, then helium formed, and now they're saying a helium hydrogen hybrid, or it seems like a chemical bond formed with helium and hydrogen. But it's still not telling us what's the importance. So what's the significance? Why is it so important that they discovered this? Well, let's read on and see what it says. Harold York is the director. Harold York is a director of the SOFIA Science Center in California's Silicon Valley. And hear what he says, and quote, "This molecule was lurking out there, but we needed the right instruments making observations in the right position, and SOFIA was able to do that perfectly," end quote. "Today, the universe is filled with large, complex structures such as planets, stars, and galaxies." Let's see. Okay, I'll stop here. Okay, so what happened is this is what I'm going to theorize. Conditions had to be right for our kind of universe to evolve. So, for example, the gravity had to be the way it is now. If gravity was a bit stronger, the stars would burn themselves out. There'd be too much gravity, and it would force the stars to burn out quicker. If there was less gravity, stars could not even form. So all these conditions, there's so many conditions, billions of conditions, had to be right for our way of life to exist, for us to evolve. Now here's another example. This is what I heard on a TV show by Professor Brian Cox. If the amount or percentage of carbon in the universe was different now, the speed of light would be different. I don't know how, but there's all these things that had to happen in order for us to evolve and form. And in the beginning, for molecules and atoms to form too. So we just take it for granted that, okay, we have hydrogen, we have carbon, we have oxygen, we have neon, we have all these elements, and we don't even think about it. But for those to form, it's quite a process, and they're cooked in stars, all these elements. And for all this thing to have formed, the conditions had to be right, and billions of trillions of things had to happen. And even for, I believe, molecules or atoms to form that formed in the early solar system, in the early universe, after the Big Bang and after that, conditions had to be there for these things to happen. So let's read on and see what the conditions are or how they can explain it to you. Okay, so today the universe is filled with large, complex structures such as planets, stars, and galaxies. But more than 13 billion years ago, following the Big Bang, the universe was hot, and all that existed was a few types of atoms, mostly helium and hydrogen. And even before that, I'm not even sure that hydrogen even existed. So how did hydrogen come to be? So I'm going to read on. As atoms combined to form the first molecules, the universe was finally able to cool and begin to take shape. Scientists have inferred that helium hybrid was this first primordial molecule. Okay, so there's the answer. I'll read that again. I was wondering, what's the importance of helium hybrid? What's the importance of it? Here we go. I'm going to read it again. As atoms combine to form the first molecules, the universe was finally able to cool and began to take shapes. Scientists have inferred that helium hybrid was this first primordial molecule. Okay, so the first type of molecule was found. And helium hybrid was just one of the many molecules that formed later. So it was the first one. It was the pioneer. And for molecules to form, conditions had to exist that would let them form. And once they started to form, helium hybrid was the first one. Once cooling began, hydrogen atoms could interact with helium hybrid, leading to the creation of molecular hydrogen, the molecule primarily responsible for the formation of the first stars. Stars went on to forge all the elements that make up our rich chemical cosmos of today. The problem, though, is that scientists could not find helium hybrid in space. This first step in the birth of chemistry was unproven until now. And so says Ralph Gustin of the Max Planck Institute, and quote, "The lack of evidence of the very existence of helium hybrid in interstellar space was a dilemma for astronomy for decades," end quote. So again, they found it, but isn't it amazing that these astronomers, these scientists, they theorize that this is the first molecule, and they do all these things, like, for example, when the Voyager's finally, when the Voyager spacecraft finally reached interstellar space, scientists had theory of what the boundary between interstellar space would be like and what interstellar space would be like itself. What were the conditions at the boundary, just before the boundary, just after the boundary? So once they got there and they went through these, I think it's called the heliosheath or something, the boundary of our solar system, then they got into interstellar space. When they did tests, their theories were proven. So I think this is quite amazing that all these things that scientists cannot see that are way out there, and they make their theories, and when they can finally test it, they're proven correct. So that's real cool. I think it's cool that all these things that happen, for example, gravitational waves. How did Einstein know there was gravitational waves? So all these theories that scientists make are proven to be correct. So let me just summarize something here. They're talking about I was talking about earlier, I was talking about of the anniversaries that were hitting, like 40, 50 years. So it was something like 50 years, or I don't know if we reached it because sometimes I'm in Asia. I don't know these things because I don't hear it in Asia. But we have been in outer space. Humans have been in outer space. We reached there 50 years ago on the moon. And humans are going to the space station. A number of humans went to the moon. And all these spacecraft are doing. So we are a spacefaring race. So I think that is amazing. So I'm going to go for a break now. When I get back, I'm going to talk about this, more about this helium hybrid molecule. So thank you for listening. You are listening to AstroTalk with Marco on CITR 101.9.
You're listening to
CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Ice cream man, can I have this? I want this over here, and a toast on by my father, and give me this ice over here, and vanilla cone. Thank you, ice cream man. Thank you, ice cream man.
Don't you put it in your mouth. Don't you put it in your mouth. Don't you stuff it in your face. Don't stuff it in your face. Though it might look good to eat. Though it might look good to eat. And it might look good to taste. And it might look good to taste. You could get sick. Ick. Real quick. Ick. Real sick. Real.
CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Don't put it in your mouth. Put it in your ear.
Ick! Don't you put it in your mouth, till you ask someone you love. That's right, sis. If it's okay to eat, if it's okay to eat, like a muffin.
Yeah, check it out. I found that canned ham, and I put it in a pot of boiling water, and guess what I'm calling it?
Soup?
Hot ham water.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, nourishing radio.
So watery, and yet there's a smack of ham to it.
Fum, tell the driver, here you come. You're coming to listen to AstroTalk with Frankie Smith and the Double Dutch Bus on CITR 101.9 at UBC. Hello, welcome back. That was Frankie Smith with a Double Dutch Bus. I used to dance to that song about 40 years ago, believe it or not. Yes, I'm not a helium hybrid. I'm just an ancient specimen. So here we go. I'm talking about helium hybrid. It was a molecule, they say, scientists say, is the first molecule that formed in the early solar system. No, in the early universe, just after the Big Bang. So that was the first one to ever form. So molecules had to be able to form. And they theorized that helium hybrid was one of was the first. It was finicky, but it was hard to find. But now they found it. So they're all excited. And I think it's quite amazing that they make these theories and they prove to be correct. So it's pretty cool, pretty satisfying. I don't know how they can make these theories. I mean, anyway, a lot of them, like, for example, Einstein, that says neutron stars and black holes can give off gravitational waves under certain conditions, like collisions and stuff. And he was right. I mean, we can't even see black holes. How can he even think about that? He didn't have a book to go to, did he? He didn't have a book. Like, I have a book now. I have the internet. I can say gravitational wave. So I go there, click it, and there we go. It tells me about gravitational waves. Einstein and all these other scientists that invented things, they didn't have their books. They just kind of theorized it. It's quite amazing. So I think it's amazing. So here we are. We have found helium hybrid. So should we celebrate? Let's see. I don't know. Okay, I'm going to go back now. Back to the article. Helium hybrid is a finicky molecule. Helium itself is a noble gas, making it very unlikely to combine with any kind of atom. That's right. I should have thought of that. Why didn't I think of that? But in 1925, scientists were able to create the molecule in a laboratory by coaxing the helium to share one of its electrons with a hydrogen ion. So let's go over some science here. In its outer orbital, outer shell, the outer shell is full in helium. And the same with all the noble gases. So it doesn't combine very easily. They don't react because they are happy. Their outer orbitals are all full with electrons. They don't need to give an electron. They don't have an extra electron in the outer shell. Or they don't have a vacancy in one of, I don't know if that's the right word to use. I shouldn't use that word. But some atoms, they need an electron to fill their outer shell. So helium doesn't have that condition. Its outer shell is full. It's happy. It doesn't react. Usually, same with other noble gases. So then, in the late 1970s, scientists studying the planetary nebula called NGC 7027. Is that the one that we are talking about today? Let's see. Yes, we are talking about NGC 7027. Thought that this environment might be just right to form helium hybrid. I wonder why they thought that. Ultraviolet radiation and heat from the aging stars create conditions suitable for helium hybrid to form. So there's the answer. But their observations were inconclusive. Subsequent efforts hinted it could be there, but the mystery molecule continued to elude detection. The space telescopes used did not have the specific technology to pick out the signal of helium hybrid from the medley of all our molecules in the nebula. In 2016, scientists turned to SOFIA for help. So that's the infrared observatory. Flying up to 45,000 feet high, SOFIA made observations above the interfering layers of Earth's atmosphere. But it has a benefit space telescopes don't. It returns after every flight. I never thought of that. So that's a benefit. So space telescopes stay up there, and after its flight, SOFIA returns. Let's see what that benefit is. So says Nasim Rangwala, SOFIA deputy project scientist, and quote, "We're able to change instruments and install the latest technology." Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. When Hubble was up there, the International Space Station could go, no, not the International Space Station, the space shuttles could fly over to Hubble and fix it or install new things. But now there's no more space shuttles, so Hubble hasn't had anything to help fix it in years. And I remember there was something wrong with the bushings or something about the plastic or the rubber things that calibrate the gyroscopes, and they had to fix it from Earth. So that's one of the benefits that Sophia, it changes, it returns after every time. So they change instruments, they can plan for, they can put an instrument to do a specific task, and they can install the latest technology. So changing instruments, I guess, would be really beneficial. And all these other things, they can fix it, they can calibrate it, change instruments, install technology. So we're able to change instruments, install the latest technology. I never thought of that. So Sophia gives them flexibility that they can respond to the most pressing questions that scientists want answered. A recent upgrade to one of Sophia's instruments called the German receiver at terahertz frequencies are great. So that's big G, big R, big E, big A, big T are great. German receiver at German receiver at terahertz frequencies added the specific channel for helium hybrid that previous telescopes did not have. The instrument works like a radio receiver. Scientists tune to the frequency of the molecule they're searching for, similar to tuning an FM radio to the right station. When Sophia took to the night skies, eager scientists were on board reading the data from the instrument in real time. Helium hybrid signal finally came through loud and clear. So it sends a radio signal. So every molecule has a frequency. I think I heard that before, but I never thought about that. So helium hybrid has a certain frequency, and that's how they found it. Just like tuning an FM radio station to the right station. So I guess carbon has a frequency, hydrogen has a frequency, oxygen have a frequency. And when you can combine all these molecules, they probably have a different frequency. So isn't chemistry interesting? But this is a mix between chemistry and physics. So there's a lot to do with chemistry in the universe that is just so fascinating. And one of my stories coming up now will be about Titan, the moon in the Saturn system, and that has a very interesting chemistry, and we're going to talk about that. Maybe it'll be about chemistry. Hopefully it is. So remember that Titan has a hydrocarbon atmosphere. So if me or you or anybody, if we had wings, we could glide through that atmosphere. It's very thick. So let's go flying in Titan. I'm trying to see his first name. Rolf Gusten. So says Rolf Gusten, and quote, "It was so exciting to be there, seeing helium hybrid for the first time in the data. This brings a long search to a happy ending and eliminates doubts about our understanding of the underlying chemistry of the early universe," end quote. So there's a nice video here, and under the video, it says, "Scientists on Sophia detected the first type of molecule that ever formed in the universe. They found the combination of helium and hydrogen called helium hybrid in a planetary nebula near the constellation Cygnus. This discovery confirms a key part of our basic understanding of the early universe and how it evolved over billions of years into the complex chemistry of today." So again, this article is on www.nasa.gov. April 17, the universe's first type of molecule is found at last. Imagine all the experiments that are going out, are on now for astronomy. It's amazing. To me, it is. Because, as you know, I love astronomy. So, there's a video here. The universe's first type of molecule is found at last. You could watch it. It's a minute 23. And it says, "The universe today is filled with planets, stars, and galaxies. But what came before?" And this is, I'm playing the video and I'm reading it. It shows a nice big explosion, probably the Big Bang. And it shows a helium and a hydrogen. And somehow they chemically bonded. And again, I'm not sure how they can bond because it's helium hybrid. Helium is a noble gas. Its outer shell is full. How did it bond? So watch the video. I think it's quite interesting, but I love astronomy. Sophia, the Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy, is a Boeing 747 SP Jetliner, modified to carry a 106-inch diameter telescope. It is a joint project of NASA and the German Aerospace Corporation or Center and NASA's AIM Research Center in California, Silicon Valley, manages SOFIA. So this is another one of NASA's great observatory, SOFIA. If you look at, it's a nice video. Again, this article was on NASA.gov, April 17th. The universe's first type of molecule is found at last. So let's go to Titan's Lakes. So I love chemistry. Sometimes I tutor or teach chemistry. And it's really, really fun. I think it's just as fun, sometimes even more fun than physics. So now we're going to look at, there's a lot of interesting chemistry going on. And not just that, somehow, not the chemical elements that are forming in the lakes, but, for example, when the sunlight hits the atmosphere of these planets, reactions happen. The chemistry is complex. It's very interesting. I remember Trina Ray told me that. All kinds of interesting and wonderful things are going on. So this is an article today, dated April 18, 2019. It says, NASA's Cassini reveals surprises with Titan's Lakes. So it is a photo here. And it says, this near-infrared color view from Cassini shows the sun glinting off Titan's North Polar Sea. So I'm going to read the article. Again, I'll just repeat the title. NASA's Cassini reveals surprises with Titan's Lakes, April 18th, NASA.gov. On its final flyby of Saturn's largest moon in 2017, NASA's Cassini spacecraft gathered radar data revealing that the small liquid lakes in Titan's northern hemisphere are surprisingly deep, perched atop hills, and filled with methane. So Trina Ray and a lot of people say methane. I don't know why, but anyway. Americans always make fun about how about. They always make fun of how we talk. So I'm not making fun of her. I'm just saying they have odd pronunciations too. Like roof, they say roof, like a dog. And okay, I'll get off that because I'm not talking about astronomy. And also they say wash. I'm going to wash my car. Let's go to Washington. Okay, enough of that. Sorry, Americans, I don't want to make fun of you, but you always make fun of us. The new findings, published April 15th in Nature Astronomy, are the first confirmation of just how deep some of Titan Lakes are, more than 300 feet or 100 meters, and of their composition. They provide new information about the way liquid methane or methane rains on, evaporates from, and seeps into Titan, the only planetary body in our solar system other than Earth known to have stable liquid on its surface. Scientists have known. That's interesting. So if you thought about that, the only other planetary to have stable liquid on its surface, Venus seems to not have stable liquid, Mars, Mercury, I guess the gas giants, I don't think they'd have water in their surface, or none of them. But there's a lot of moons, like, for example, Saturn and Jupiter surpass, I think they have more than 60 moons each, little moons, some of them. But isn't that interesting? Earth and Titan are the only planetary bodies in our solar system to have stable liquid on their surfaces. I didn't know that. Back to the article. Scientists have known that Titan's hydrologic cycle works similarly to Earth, with one major difference. Instead of water evaporating from seas, forming clouds and rain, Titan does it all with methane and ethane, or methane and ethane. We think of these hydrocarbons as a gas on Earth, unless they're pressurized in a tank. But Titan is so cold that they behave as liquids, like gasoline at room temperature on our planet. Scientists, So gas at room temperature on our planet is a liquid, but at room temperature, it's a gas on Earth. But on Titan, methane and ethane are liquids because it's so cold. Scientists have known that much larger northern seas are filled with methane, but finding the smaller northern lakes filled mostly with methane was a surprise. Previously, Cassini data measured Ontario Lacus, the only major lake in Titan's southern hemisphere. There they found a roughly equal mixture of methane and ethane. Ethane is slightly heavier than methane, with more carbon and hydrogen atoms in its makeup. So says Cassini radar scientist at Pasadena, California. His name is Marco Mastro Giuseppe. That's not me, but it's Marco. End quote. Every time we make discoveries on Titan, Titan becomes more and more mysterious. But these new measurements help give an answer to five key questions. We can actually now better understand the hydrology of Titan. Hydrology, that's a big word. End quote. I'm not sure what that means, so I'll just skip it and keep going. I don't want to make myself look like a fool. Again, okay. Adding to the oddities of Titan, with its Earth-like features carved by exotic materials, is the fact that the hydrology on one side of the northern hemisphere is completely different than that of the other side, said Cassini scientist and co-author Jonathan Lunine of Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. And here's what Professor Lunine says, end quote, it is as if you look down on Earth's North Pole and you could see that North America had completely different geological settings for bodies of liquid than Asia does, end quote. So I'm still not sure how different it would be. I'll read on. Let's see. On the eastern side of Titan, there are big seas with low elevation, canyons, and islands. On the western side, small lakes. And the new measurements show that the lakes perched atop big hills and plateaus. The new radar measurements confirmed earlier findings that the lakes are far above sea level, or methane sea. But they conjure a new image of landforms like mesas or butts. So that's mesas, M-E-S-A-S, or butts is B-U-T-T-E-S, sticking hundreds of feet above the surrounding landscape with deep liquid lakes on top. So it seems here the smaller lakes that are on the mountains are quite deep. Now that's pretty deep itself. The fact that these western lakes are small, just tens of miles across, but very deep, also tells scientists something new about their geology. It's the best evidence yet that they likely formed when the surrounding bedrock of ice and solid organics chemically dissolved and collapsed. On Earth, I'll read that again, I don't know if I'll understand it. It's the best evidence yet that they likely formed, that's the lakes, when the surrounding bedrock of ice and solid organics chemically dissolved and collapsed. On Earth, similar water lakes are known as karstic lakes, that's K-A-R-S-T-I-C, occurring in areas like Germany, Croatia, and the United States. They form when water dissolves limestone bedrock. Complicated. I don't want to comment on it because I'll make myself look like a fool. So anyway, going on, alongside the investigation of deep lakes, a second paper in Nature Astronomy helps unravel more of the mystery of hydrogen's hydrologic cycle. So I guess it's like Earth's water cycle. Researchers use Cassini data to reveal what they call transient lakes. Different sets of observations from radar and infrared data seem to show liquid levels significantly changed. The best explanation is that there was some seasonally driven change in the surface liquids, says lead author Shannon McKenzie, planetary science at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory. And so says Ms. Shannon McKenzie, or Professor Shannon McKenzie, in quote, one possibility is that these transient features could have been shallower bodies of liquid that over the course of the seasons evaporated and infiltrated into the subsurface, end quote. Okay, so I'm going to go to a break, and when I come back, we're going to talk about more about Titan and its subsurface lakes. This is Marco. You are listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. This is Marco, and you're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 with Nelly and Kelly Rowland.
Oh, yeah. she just moved right up the block for me. And she got the hots for me, the finest thing my hood has seen. But oh no, no, she got a man and a son though. Oh, when that's okay, cause I wait for my cue and just listen. Play my position like a show star. Pick up everything, mommy, and then in no time I better make this with him mine. And that's for sure.
Doing everything, the St. Louis thing with Nelly on CITR 101.9's AstroTalk.
Tell me, Mom, what's it gonna be, she said.
You don't know what you mean to me.
Said that people disappoint, but pizza is eternal. That adage is being put to the test with Canadians weighing in on pizza, love, and slice etiquette. 6 in 10 Canadians have some type of relationship deal breaker when it comes to pizza, but 1 in 3 have no pizza love limits at all. The top deal breaker was eating pizza in bed at 18%, and closely behind was anchovies on pizza at 17%. Next up were picks the cheese off at 10, eats pizza with a knife and fork at 8%, uses too much garlic dipping sauce at 7%, puts pineapple on pizza at 6%, doesn't eat the crust at 6%, and eats it cold at 4%. So cuddle up on the couch and share some za and some love.
It's not just rich people that own the media.
But by leaving out the most important things you need to know, they can elevate awareness to a new all-time low.
I own my media.
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 The Media Co-op is a grassroots national news network that's owned by its members.
But if it's just left out, can you say the paper lied? A lot of things that happened didn't happen after all. If there's no one in the forest who will put it in the news, I guess the tree didn't fall.
Join us today at mediacoop.ca/join.
I'm joining today. You should too.
Welcome back. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. I'm going to promise you guys something right now. I am going to contact NASA. I said that last week and I didn't do it, so I am going to do it. There's the article on the in the atmosphere, the C or the C, I forget what it was, C-O, when I go to my CITR thing, the observatory, OCO3, where they're looking at the carbon and stuff in the atmosphere, so the amount of gas, so I'm going to do that for sure, I promise you that. So hopefully I can get an interview soon. I used to do a lot more interviews, now I haven't, so I'm going to do an interview, and I promised you, so I will do that for sure. So I'm going to continue with my article on the Titan and the Cassini spacecraft that was there, the moon Titan. It was examining some lakes on Titan just before it died, just before it crash landed. So this is one of the last things it did, I believe. So again, there's some lakes on Titan, methane or ethane. And they are very deep, but they're shallow. They're up on the mountains, up on the hills. I'm sorry, they're very deep, but they're not wide across. I'm sorry. They're not deep and shallow. That would be contradictory. So they're quite deep, and they're like tens of kilometers across, but about 1,000 meters or more deep. So I'm going to keep reading about the article. Alongside the investigation of deep lakes, a second paper helps unravel more of the mystery of Titan's hydrological cycle. So just wait, I'm going to give the listeners, if there's any out there, NASA's Cassini reveals surprises with Titan lakes. This is the article, April 18th on nasa.gov. So again, NASA's Cassini reveals surprises with Titan's Lake. So I guess what they found is in the northern hemisphere, the types of lakes can differ. Some of them are wide and shallow. Some of them are narrow across, but they're very deep. These are the ones in the mountains. So let's show different sets of observations from radar and infrared data show that liquid levels significantly changed when they were looking at transient lakes. So there's some kinds of transient lakes in there. These results are in the Nature Astronomy paper, and what they do on Titan's deep lakes, they support the idea that hydrocarbon rain feeds the lakes, which can then evaporate back into the atmosphere or drain into the subsurface, leaving reservoirs of liquid stored below. So maybe it's like our water cycle on Earth, and they have a hydrocarbon cycle. Cassini, which arrived in the Saturn system in 2004 and ended its mission in 2017 by deliberately plunging into Saturn's atmosphere, mapped more than 620,000 square miles or 1.6 million square kilometers of liquid lakes and seas on Titan's surface. Talking about kilometers and miles, I thought that was cute. There was an ad the other day on TV, one of the Toronto Raptors, I guess he's American, and it was pretty funny. They said, it's so-and-so kilometers. He says, what's a kilometer? So that was pretty funny. Anyway, I'll keep going. So Cassini mapped more than 1.6 million square kilometers of liquid lakes and seas on Titan's surface. It did the work with the radar instrument, which sent out radio waves and collected a return signal or echo that provided information about the terrain and the liquid body's depth and composition, along with two imaging systems that can penetrate the moon's thick atmosphere. So I'm just theorizing here. So let's say it sends a signal down to Titan, and the radar signal hits the liquid lake surface. Okay, so it's methane or ethane. Does the radar signal bounce up, or does it, maybe part of it bounce up, or does it keep going to the bottom of the lake where it finally found solid ground and then bounces back up? That's interesting. There probably is a different signature. When it hits the liquid methane, there's maybe a signature. And when maybe it keeps going through the optical medium with its methane, it keeps going down. It finally hits rock or surface or ice or whatever it is, then it bounces back up. And I'm wondering how, I guess, when you hit solid surface, you just calculate how long did it take for the radar signal to go down and bounce back. And there you can find the depth. So I guess that's when they hit the surface of the methane, and that's probably, I'm not sure about this, there's probably a signature that tells the people on the radar station. And there's no one on the spacecraft, of course, but on the radar station that's operating this, when it finally hit a liquid surface. That's interesting. Okay. The crucial data for the new research were gathered on Cassini's final close flyby of Titan on April 22, 2017. It was the mission's last look at the moon's smaller lakes, and the team made the most of it, collecting echoes from the surfaces of small lakes while Cassini zipped by Titan was a unique challenge. So says Professor Lunine, and quote, this was Cassini's last hurrah at Titan, and it was really a feat, end quote. So Cassini was a cooperative project of NASA, the European Space Agency, and the Italian Space Agency, not Canada. JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, managed the mission for science, for NASA's Science Directorate, and JPL designed and assembled the Cassini orbiter. So that was a look at, there's something here. It says, a new signal for a neutron star collision is discovered. But first, I got to go to Hubble, because Hubble is celebrating its 29th anniversary. So, 29, so it'll be 30 pretty soon. So what I just looked at is methane and ethane lakes on Titan, and the deep lakes, because they are on the mountains. Okay, so now Hubble celebrates 29th anniversary with a colorful look at the Southern Crab Nebula. This is on NASA.gov, dated April 18th. And there's a beautiful photo of the Crab Nebula. Really gorgeous. In the celebration of the 29th anniversary of the launch of NASA's Hubble Space Telescope, astronomers captured this festive, colorful look at the tentacled Southern Crab Nebula. The nebula, official known as H2-104, is located several thousand light years from Earth in the southern hemisphere constellation of Centaurus. It appears to have two nested hourglass-shaped structures that were sculpted by a whirling pair of stars in a binary system. The duo consists of an aging red giant star and a burned-out star, a white dwarf. The red giant is shedding its outer layers. Some of this ejected material is attracted by the gravity of the companion white dwarf. So again, you got to see this. It's just a beautiful picture. It's on NASA.gov. April 18th, Hubble celebrates 29th anniversary with a colorful look at the Southern Crab Nebula. Okay, the result is that both stars are embedded in a flat disk of gas stretching between them. This belt of material constricts the outflow of gas so that it only speeds away above and below the disk. The result is an hourglass-shaped nebula. So it does look like an hourglass and two beautiful rings in the inside. Nice color. A lot of whites and a lot of shades, and the bright green in the middle. It's a bright white dwarf star. It very looks gorgeous. Okay. So the bubble of gas appear brightest at the edges, giving the illusion of a crab leg structures. These legs are likely to be the places where the outflow slams into the surrounding interstellar gas and dust, or possibly material which was earlier lost by the red giant star. The outflow may only last a few thousand years, a tiny fraction of the lifetime of the system. The object was first reported in the late 1960s, and these observations originally only showed an outer hourglass emanating from a bright central region. Hubble photographed the Southern Crab in 1999 to reveal complicated nested structures. These latest images, taken in March 2019 with a wide set of color filters, on Hubble's newest, sharpest detector, Wide-Field Camera 3. The image is a composition of observations taken in various colors of light that correspond to the glowing gases in the nebula. Red is sulfur, green is hydrogen, orange is nitrogen, and blue is oxygen. Hubble launched on April 24th, 1990, aboard the Space Shuttle Discovery. So I'm going to quickly talk about this. And another article, April 16th, a new signal for a neutron star collision. So this is, I'm hurrying this because I really wanted to talk about this. So it shows two neutron stars. It shows a bright burst of X-rays have been discovered by NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory in a galaxy 6.6 billion light years from Earth, in a galaxy far, far away. This event likely signaled the merger of two neutron stars and could give astronomers fresh insight into how neutron stars, dense stellar objects packed mainly with neutrons, are built. So I'm going to end now because I got to go to work. So thank you for listening. This was Marco. You have been listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9, and I promise I will get back to you. I will contact someone at NASA and try to get an interview. Thank you for listening. Have a pleasant rainy weekend. Goodbye.